Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to show number 340 from Engage for Success. I'm host for today's show. I'm Jo Moffat. I'm one of the co-radio show hosts at Engage for Success. And along with Jo Dodds, my other host, I'm also co-strategy director of our social movement. And our purpose is about inspiring people and workplaces to thrive. And at the moment, I suppose we possibly need to adapt that and say that our purpose is inspiring people and their virtual workplaces to thrive. And so I'd just like to welcome all of those listeners to the show who are tuning in from somewhere that is not their usual place of work, and hope that you are all beginning to get to grips with what is clearly, a very overused word, but clearly very true, unprecedented times. But we're going to stick with our normal schedule in terms of our normal topic, and I think we might go off piste a little bit to begin with. Today's show is going to be looking at employee engagement from the perspective of a manager, and we're going to be asking what can a manager actually do about it. And to help us navigate that discussion, I'm very pleased to welcome today's guest, Jo España. Jo is executive consultant and coach at Performance Equations, and he's going to be discussing this with me in the next sort of half an hour. So welcome to the show, Jo.
Delighted to be with you, Jo. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, lots of Joes. So two Joes host the radio show. Now we have Jo as a guest. It's all going to get very confusing, I think. But yes, well, thank you for joining us. And we're going to be talking really about the particular emphasis that the line manager's role, that we need to place on the role of the line manager in terms of employee engagement. But before, and of course, that is one of our four enablers of engagement as far as Engage for Success is concerned. The enabler number two is very much about the role the line manager plays in this. But before we get into that, as we were saying before the show kicked off, very much the burning topic of the moment is the current climate, which is something that is impacting all of us pretty much wherever we are working in the world. And I think really, as far as the current climate is concerned, many managers are being thrust into a role that they've not necessarily had any training for or any support. And we often talk, don't we, about how line managers often don't get an awful lot of training for being people managers. And if that's the case, I think it's fair to say they get even less when it comes to managing remote teams. So that makes really today's conversation even more topical, I think, doesn't it, Jo? So what are your views about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that struck me literally in the last 3 weeks when everything is starting to clamp down is how more and more people throughout social media and just conversations I've been having generally with colleagues and the network is this is a real hot potato subject, isn't it? All of a sudden, here we were perhaps running a team of however many all co-located, or maybe with nowadays with flexible working where people might have taken the odd day or two and worked from home. Now we're all in disparate locations, all trying to do as best we can in the circumstances. And it's a real challenge for team leaders, team managers. You know, how do I still achieve all the things that I want to achieve with my team and also at the same time acknowledge how they might be feeling about everything with all the uncertainty about future employment and everything that's, you know, just the general uncertainty. So it's a real challenge. And I think that this is a bit of a comet with a very long tail, the whole issue of if we thought that, maybe engaging our colleagues and team members while we were all together in a place of work, it's going to be even harder when we're all disparate, I think. So it's a really
absolutely
hot subject.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, it's interesting, actually. I mean, Wood Reed, my consultancy, we did a blog on this last week about the challenges of it, and we kind of looked at it from a slightly different perspective, because I think one of the other sides of the equation is that on the one hand, you've got line managers and leaders trying to think, how can we motivate and engage our people to maintain levels of productivity? And if you're not careful, actually that can, from an employee perspective, make them feel a sense of kind of almost always on, you know, that they daren't step away from their computer, they daren't step away from their laptop. And of course, that's you know, only a recipe for disaster when it comes to sort of burnout and everything else. So we kind of looked at how managers really do need to trust their people, and I know that's going to be a theme that you're going to be talking about. So I would recommend that as a read to anyone who's listening. So go to woodread.com/blog and see what you think about that. You know, certainly Joe, do pick up on that too. So let's get back to the topic then, employee engagement, and what can a manager actually do about it? Now, as I say, it's the second of the Engage for Success four enablers. The first one being what is clearly an important one, which is the important role of leaders in organisations. But I think you really think that's really where the emphasis ought to lie, don't you, in terms of managers? Very much something that they can do at a micro level. And I just wonder if you could sort of explain your philosophy of that a little bit more for us, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say that it's something that I've invented or anything like that. It's basically an accumulation of a study I did with colleagues over several years, and then testing out ideas with clients, which was trying to synthesize all the research that was out there. We did a massive desktop piece of research in terms of all, you know, people with bigger brains than me were working on this subject. And it occurred to me from what we were reading that, you know, there's no doubt whatsoever that there are a number of multiple factors affecting employee engagement, and organizations apply a range of people strategies, don't they? So that could be from total reward and benefit, recognition programs, internal communications, obviously training and development, career and succession planning, and maybe even where they've got it, community involvement programs. But that's kind of like big picture, sort of big organizational efforts. But what we found from the reading was that actually the main engine, there's two things actually. One is that the main engine of or the operating level at which engagement actually lived was at the team level, and pivotal to that was the relationships that predominantly were between the team members and the line manager, their immediate line manager. And by the way, this was true not just for front line, but all the way through. And even you get people like Patrick Lencioni talking about this, doesn't he, with the five behaviors of an effective team. So the role of the immediate line manager at whatever level of the organization is kind of like a fulcrum driving this thing forward, amongst other things, obviously. It's not to discount other things. It's such a pivotal thing. And what they're doing makes a big difference. So what managers do, how they behave, what they say, how they say it, that all of that affects the sense of engagement that individuals might have in their team. And so that's, you know, we've taken it right down to the most, the smallest operating unit that we can find, rather than sort of the entire organization approach.
And these may not even be people that have the name, have the word manager in their job title, mightn't they, Joe? I mean, they could
be
team leaders, shift supervisors, you know, that kind of thing.
Anybody that has, one of the interesting things, and I think there's a nice overlap in the sense of the impact all this is going to have, an overlap with our current situation is, it's starting to ask some, or rather, it's accelerating some of the questions that are being raised about the very nature of work and this whole notion of hierarchical or matrix structure and actually titles. So, in fact, I'm working with a company based in Tunbridge, in fact, where they don't have managers at all. What they've got is they divided the traditional manager role into two. One, which is responsible for direction, strategic directions, sort of identifying KPIs and measurement of KPIs, and helping people to formulate objectives and that kind of thing. But then the other side of the role, so that's kind of like the operational activity. The other side of the role, which is we might label as performing, so the individual's performance, is labeled the coach. And a coach can be anybody in the organization.
It doesn't have to be
the person that you kind of, there isn't kind of like a formalized reporting structure in that sense. But nevertheless, the need to create circumstances where, and this is where I think I'd diverge slightly in terms of definitions. I know that when Nita Clark and David McLeod first wrote the book on it, they found at least 50 different definitions of engagement. But I think the one thing that's happened in terms of the time I've been working on this subject, which is, nearly coming up to 10 years with clients, is that it doesn't matter what you call it, what your definition is, but understand how the circumstances create a situation whereby an individual at whatever level in the organization can feel a sense of engagement with what the business is trying to achieve, the fact that my role matters and that I enjoy coming to work and I like the people I work with and I feel connected to something. And so I think it's nothing to do with titles. I think it's to do with that sort of human relationship and the outcome of feelings that emerge from it, which actually contribute to what this team or this function or this business, as we go up, is trying to achieve. And I think that those are key things. I think the other thing that emerged is that this big overlap between our sort of my approach and the Engage for Success model, in the sense that the four fundamental pillars that kept on repeating themselves every time we read about things but actually tested it out with clients, was that there's these four fundamental pillars, and you've mentioned one of them already: trust, the sense of emotional connection that an individual might have with the business and this team, the actual workplace climate, and I think the most difficult pillar is a sense of personal ownership for whatever level of engagement I might have. And so those kept on emerging strongly.
I'd like to talk about them. I'd like to explore them in a little bit in a moment. I have to say, I couldn't agree with you more about the it doesn't matter what you call it. There's so many aspects of this whole area, aren't there, where people, it seems to me, people expend far too much energy debating the titles, the labels, the definitions than they do in terms of actually practically rolling up their sleeves and getting out and doing something about it. And what is the definition of engagement is one of those. And do we call it engagement, or do we call it experience, or do we call it loyalty, what do we call it, motivation? I'm fascinated by this organization you mentioned. Just before we move on, perhaps we just talk a little bit more about them, and without sort of sharing any commercial confidentialities, what kind of sector are they in, and what kind of sized organization are they, and how have they taken such a, what drove them to take what is actually, many people listening might think, is quite such a radical step of introducing this kind of coach role?
Well, I'd urge everybody perhaps at the end of this to actually have a look at the series of posts I put on LinkedIn where I interviewed the operations director precisely about that question you've just asked me, where just over a year ago. So let me just first point out the things that they've achieved, and they've really taken a very radical approach to all of this. There may be some questions about what they did couldn't apply to much larger organizations with much more formalized structures, but their sector is digital marketing. They're a young, in terms of demographic, they're a young organization. They've grown tremendously in terms of employee numbers. I think they're up to about 30 or so it's not huge, but they're 30 literally in the last 2 years. But some of the results that they've achieved are just outstanding. So I'll just give you a couple to point out. So they're number one in Kent for the Sunday Times top 100 companies to work for. They are number 11, I think, in the UK. And then got all sorts of other different awards associated with that. And that is in the first attempt of listing on the Sunday Times 100. Mm. When I interviewed the operations director, I said, well, you know, what drove all this? And it was a sense of we can't be doing all the stuff that we've always been used to years back. You know, mm-hmm. we're not going to get the same kind of connection, a desire and a sense of purpose by doing all the old stuff. So mm-hmm. over a period of time, they basically borrowed all sorts of ideas from all sorts of areas and worked really hard on their culture to practically implement all of these ideas with the staff. So it was a collective effort, mm-hmm. even to the extent of now, you know, some of the things you might hear about them is that, for example, they have unlimited paid annual leave. And right. the interesting thing was, unlimited annual leave, all sorts of other benefits, but actually they've really worked really hard on the notion of giving autonomy mm-hmm. and responsibility within certain guidelines to their employees. And mm. the thing that they've achieved from a pound, shillings and pence, old money, I know, just showing my age there.
That's all right, we know what you mean. I certainly know what you mean.
From a bottom line point of view, their profits have jumped enormously. And mm-hmm. over two consecutive years, they've beaten everything. So I think they're in three digits, the growth of their profitability and their business growth.
All right. Well,
case study.
Yeah. So that's all on interviews are all on your LinkedIn profile,
yes,
Joe. Certainly I should go and have a look at that because that sounds really interesting.
Yes,
Tunbridge being just down the road from me as well. That's just a whole new dimension to it. So
well,
I guess from what you were describing there. Sorry?
The company is Redico. And if you just look at my posts, there's a series of video interviews I held with Luke Kite, who's the he's now changed his title, but his original title was operations director.
Right. Interesting. Well, I should definitely seek that out. So, I mean, from what you were just saying and talking about those what you think are the four most important factors in helping managers actually do something about employee engagement. You talked about trust, emotional connection, climate and ownership. I mean, clearly, when you talk about unlimited annual holiday, and that plays very much to trust, of course, doesn't it? And then that whole accountability thing plays very much to ownership, I guess. But move on now, just to talk a little bit then, because I'm very conscious that I sort of diverted you down that route, but I was just fascinated to learn a little bit more about
sure.
it. I think our listeners probably would be too. Tell us a little bit about these four factors, if you would, Joe.
Okay, well, briefly, and I think that the case study I sort of alluded to really is predicated on the very first factor, this first pillar of trust.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of is the cornerstone of everything. And the way that team leaders, managers, supervisors, even more senior leaders, what they actually do to create a sense of trustworthiness in them, but also their expression of trust in their employees and direct line reports, that kind of thing, is
mm-hmm.
massively important. I think
mm-hmm.
it was, and I'm probably paraphrasing here, but it was, I think it's Stephen Covey in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective
mm-hmm.
People, that he basically said, you know, without trust, we don't really collaborate. We only coordinate and at very best cooperate. And it's
mm-hmm.
trust that transforms a work group into a team. And there's just tons of research on this subject. And really great writers like Patrick Lencioni, Paul Zak, John Blakey, Stephen Covey Sr. and Stephen Covey Jr. And, of course, then David Meister, who actually came up with the trust equation. So it's really, really at the center of it all and how leaders or managers actually express this and, you know, the kind of things that they could do that, this is particularly from Lencioni, show vulnerability trust, their willingness to to actually say, well, I admit I don't have all the answers. And I think that's particularly pertinent right now when, you know, a lot of managers still don't have all the answers, you know, and there is a big desire, sort of an innate human desire, isn't there, to want to help and support people, but we don't have all the answers. But the almost counterintuitive thing is the willingness to be open about that actually creates bonds of trust. Disclosing things about oneself in terms of previous experiences or even indeed my own fears and concerns about the current situation, again, creates those bonds of relationship trust. Other things would be like openly admitting mistakes and taking responsibility for, you know, when things go wrong and providing a genuine apology. All of those things create those kind of weave in into the DNA of the team and the relationships in the team a much greater sense of trust, which, you know, as David Maister would say, is not just about having sort of business credibility that makes you trustworthy as a manager, as a leader. That competence is no longer enough. It's all these. It's a whole package, isn't it? About
it is, and I guess I mean that would I say that would it be true to say that that leads on to the second one, the emotional connection, because it actually takes a considerable amount of emotional intelligence to demonstrate that you trust your people and to earn their trust, doesn't it? Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. Totally. What we found was that, you know, as probably describing them as almost as if they were separate pillars doesn't do them justice, because it's more of these pieces of a jigsaw puzzle working together. So there is this component which is about individuals feeling emotionally connected to this team and loyalty to this team, this effort, collective effort, this organization, and actually enjoying that. Well, that's kind of influenced by how I feel around the trust relationship I might have with my team members and my immediate line manager, but also that's part of the story in relation to the actual work climate that we've got. You know, organizations often, certainly clients I work with, talk a lot about organizational culture, and I often say to them, well, yes, but actually, if you want to affect the change or transformation of organizational culture, that's too big of an elephant to eat in all in one go. Let's actually focus in on a smaller factor, which is climate, you know, the climate of you and me here now, and what kind of atmosphere, tone are we creating. What we know is, and the research on this is just now overwhelming, that the tone is set by the immediate line manager and the emotional connection that is created there. It's, you know, all the data seems to suggest that the line manager, or the sort of person responsible for the team, will create and influence these feelings of feeling connected. And so some of the practical things will be stuff around, you know, things like the quality of feedback, the quality of the conversations, the nature of the conversations, how leaders and managers, supervisors, whatever their role is, enable people to be heard and provide recognition for the kind of things they're doing. So the receiver of those messages, the employee, feels actually what I do counts and really matters to the bigger effort. And that's very affecting around how people connect emotionally. And, of course, it provides a sense of pride as well in terms
of
you know, what we're trying to do together.
Sorry to interrupt you there, but just to sort of explain how you see climate as differing from culture.
I see it as a component part. So culture, you know, the vernacular way of describing it nowadays is culture is the way we do things around here. And obviously there's going to be all sorts of norms and behaviours and the values of the espoused values of the organisation. All those kind of things contribute to the desired culture that a company, big or small, wants to create. But actually making it happen operates at a sort of more, again, more micro level, which is what's it like for most people to come and work with me. And the tone that I set, whether it's a buzzy atmosphere, whether it's fun to be here, whether there's an atmosphere of enjoyment, whether there's psychological safety. So, for example, I can raise without fear anything on any topic, and it won't ruin any of the relationships here. So climate is really about how we feel about things here, as opposed to culture being the way we do things around here.
Okay, thank you. And I'm conscious that time is moving on. We've got just under 5 minutes left. And can we talk a little bit about the fourth one then, ownership? What part does that play?
This one's really, really the important and the most difficult, I think, from what I've seen, both in terms of the literature and also what was happening at work. And it kind of relates to the notion I've been describing about moving from the macro down to the micro. One of the challenges of thinking about employee engagement at the macro, wider organizational level is that for many people, that still feels a bit like it's being done to me. And very often it's through the auspices of an annual survey or something like that, and maybe a conversation around the report kind of thing.
But okay, that's absolutely one of my pet hates, this idea that you do employee engagement to somebody. Oh, it's Thursday afternoon, I better do some employee engagement.
Indeed.
I can tick that box. No,
Indeed.
So I'm with you.
So we
absolutely
need to
with
change
you on that.
The paradigm, in a way, the mindset around this, and line managers have a really big role to play here, because if you can imagine sort of in your mind's eye a wedge, the wedge is that we're trying to move the whole notion of, in inverted commas, the responsibility for building higher levels of engagement from the organization to the employee. And so this is kind of touching into the realms of, mental and health and good health and well-being, in the sense of people taking responsibility for how I feel around here. Now, I do believe that taking that wedge kind of example for a moment, if you can visualize that, I think in order to get that ball rolling, mixing my metaphors slightly, the organization, but particularly the line manager, has to do certain things to just get the ball rolling a bit. But the overall objective in terms of moving towards ownership is that getting people to feel I can do certain things about how I feel working in this situation, and that I can actually actively instigate things with my line manager and with my team in order to increase our level of engagement. After all, we're going to get if we do a survey, we're going to get a report. But rather than saying, what's the company going to... I mean, I'm stealing a little bit from John Kennedy, aren't I? It's not, don't think what can the company do for you, but rather what can you do for yourself?
Absolutely.
And,
so it's a two-directional thing, isn't it, in terms of those factors, really? You've got a certain amount of it in the hands and the gift of the manager, the team leader, the coach, or whatever name we're going to give them. And then there's also a sense whereby they're trying to convey the fact that actually their people can and should and would want to play their part in kind of doing some work from the ground up. So they kind of come together in this.
Definitely. That's what we've noticed over the years, is that, obviously other people have sort of, with bigger brains, have kind of articulated this better than me. But if you take people like Daniel Pink, where he talked about purpose, mastery and autonomy.
Of course.
It kind of
plays
it plays into that where, if you give people the freedom within certain criteria and just allow them, provide the a release of the reins, very often people will identify, maybe with a bit of help, what the real purpose is, and they want to be really good, and all of that is engaging, so that they feel, I really want to come into work today because it's actually exciting and I enjoy it. So again, I think there's a connection here with Maslow as well, because I mean, if you think of today, if you're really, really worrying about have I got a job by the end of the month, then obviously your levels of engagement are kind of going to be quite low.
But
again, the data says a proactive line manager at whatever level in the organization can actually influence that in a positive way, even mm-hmm. despite the fact that people are maybe thinking, you know, I'm out okay. of a job or anything else. And it's connected yes. to employee experience as well, because their experience today is the brand of the organization. And so, mm-hmm. you know, however we treat people today is the perceptions that they will be, the lasting perceptions they'll be left with. And I think the manager plays a really pivotal role in that.
And that's a fabulous point at which we need to end, I'm afraid, because we've run completely out of time. But I think we've spent a lot of time in depth on some of those things, which has been great. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. I'll point them towards your LinkedIn page, Joe. Joe España, thank you very much for taking us through the topic this afternoon. And goodbye, everybody. Thank you.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.